second hour, Darren Donick and Chase live at Hawkins Field here on this gorgeous Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day thus far. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe alongside. Willie will join us a little bit later this hour. He's down in Dallas with the Predators and Stars tonight. A puck drop at 7:30. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call here on these airwaves, and I'll have pregame for you starting at 6:30. It is a little weird that we're here on the campus of Vanderbilt and Willie is not with us. But the athletics director is, Dr. Candace Story Lee, is here in the press box with us. It is good to see you in person.
In person.
Well, I mean, I've seen you in person, but I mean, we've never done like an interview.
I know, and Willie's not here.
And Willie's not
here. That's all right. I'm glad y'all are here, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. It's we're happy to be here, and there's a lot going on right now.
There is.
The women played they started their season. So let's start there.
Sure.
So they get a win last night, and I want to start there because I've followed, you know, the program at Vanderbilt, women's basketball program, since I've been here almost 25 years. Mm-hmm. You kind of know that program quite well. It's dipped in interest. What is it going to take to get the interest level back to when you were playing in the days when people were talking about it all the time? And especially if the Lady Vols came into town. I mean, it was a big to-do.
It was.
And it's been a while since we've had those conversations, Candace. So how does that happen? Is it just simply winning? I don't believe that, though.
I think winning is certainly I wouldn't downplay the significance of winning, right? So the product on the court is a big piece of it. But I also think that, in general, we just need to get back to creating special moments for fans and connections with our young people. Like, I remember when I played, I felt like I knew the fan base.
Really?
You know, it felt personal. And I do think that even as we continue to grow and evolve, having those touch points is still important. You know, Jerry Stackhouse had an event with the men's basketball program on Sunday at Topgolf. That was one of the things that he said he wanted to do, was create opportunities for people to get to know these kids. They're phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Our staff is phenomenal. Our student athletes are phenomenal. So I think we will continue to do that in women's basketball too. It starts with also having the right leader. You know, when I played here, Jim Foster was incredible in so many ways. Mm-hmm. He was the right leader. I think we now have the right leader for this time, for this era, in Shea Ralph. That too is a part of it, right? And it starts with changing the culture. So there are many, many pieces. I was really excited for the win that she got last night because it's been a long time since those young women have experienced victory in so many ways, including on the court.
Yeah.
So that was a big step. But she's building, and I know what that is. I understand what that looks like. I would also say to you that the bar was not set when I played. Like, we expect to surpass that, but it was pretty tremendous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I to date myself, I remember watching you.
And then you're dating both of us. You know that.
I wanted to put it in my lap, is what I was trying to do.
I appreciate that. I'm just kidding.
I was telling her before we came on the air that, you know, I would come as a kid. You know, I grew up in that gym.
I mean, he made it sound like decades, right?
Sure, he's
like, and then he goes, and I watched you. Like, he was a kid watching me. He did say that, and I didn't even correct him.
So he's like, I remember having cotton candy and lodging.
Good times at Memorial Gym.
Oh, absolutely. And they're coming back, too.
Well, last thing on that front, then. What you brought up Shea Ralph. So what was it about her that you knew she was the right person to take the reins moving forward?
So when I let Stephanie White go, the first thing I did was, after doing that, I talked with our student-athletes about what they felt like they needed. I had a pretty good idea, but I wanted to hear directly from them so that they could – be a part of this new culture and the process. And I knew that they needed a firm hand, but with a soft touch. We need somebody that is strong, X's, nose, like on the floor, but they also needed somebody that was just going to help develop them off the court too. Love on them, be tough on them, have some standards. No one should read into that, you know, our previous coach didn't do that. It's not meant to slight our previous coach. It was clearly time for a change. But I would say that I knew that Shea was the ultimate competitor. I also know she cares deeply for people. That's part of our ethos. You know, I knew that she would fit well into our community. And I will tell you, because I said the same thing when we hired our other two new head coaches last year, that the camaraderie among our head coaches is really special. And so I also take that into consideration, how they're going to fit into, because we have some of the best coaches mm-hmm. in the country.
Yeah.
Right. And so that, like, it's important that we also keep that mojo where it is, and having strong leaders. So the people that fit Vanderbilt are people who are committed to developing young people. They understand that the sport is an extension of the education. They care deeply. They're fiercely competitive. They operate with integrity, and they care for one another in this community. She checked all of those boxes easily.
By the way, I wasn't surprised that Coach Stack had his event at Topgolf.
I mean,
the man likes to play golf.
Man, it's debatable how good he is. That's what I heard.
Well, see, that's where I was going.
That's what I heard. Now, you know, that's my guy, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you. And as someone who only excels at putt-putt, I cannot really comment. I cannot really comment.
What is excelling at putt-putt? What is what's your handicap?
Oh, listen, when I say excel, I mean excelling in talking trash and every now and then hitting the ball in the hole.
Okay.
I'm not talking about scores here, my friend. I'm not talking about
that. So your standards are a little lower.
It's about fun.
I wouldn't say low. I would say different.
That's a good way of putting it. We saw him at Vanderbilt Legends on, what was that, probably early September for Brent Peterson's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cause he was there, obviously doing great work for Parkinson's disease.
And yes,
he was. Coach Stack was there. I didn't see him actually play a hole, but I mean, I saw him out on the course, and I was like, man, I know he loves to play golf, but I wonder really how good he is. He's a tremendous athlete
tremendous competitor. So the thing is, like, you just know he'll continue to work at it because he's so competitive. You can't be that type of elite athlete and not see that, even if it's not in basketball, right? Even if it's in golf.
Yeah. So how is he handled? Because he wants to win, you know, and like any crazy competitor.
That's right.
He wants to win at a high level, and I'm sure he's not been satisfied with the level of winning that they've done. So how does he internally handle that? Because he is a fierce competitor, and he wants to win everything. So how is he – because this is now year
– This is year three.
Three?
This is year three.
I was going to say, it's either three or four. It's flying by.
It is, and COVID really does mess with the calendar I know.
Things get lost in the shuffle with that. So how has he handled that, and how does he feel about this upcoming season that starts tonight?
Well, I think you all are going to speak to him today, right?
Oh,
are
we
talking to him? Or
I think we were trying, but he's
Let me talk for him. No, I was going to say I certainly don't want to speak for him, but you know, I spend a lot of time with Jerry and with all of our coaches, and I think that part of how he's dealt with it is that, like, he understands the importance of culture.
Yeah.
Right, and team dynamics really matter. And he has created a culture that I think he is now confident in, right? Added some pieces where we had gaps. Even just watching them in practice, I mean, those kids, from the moment that he's taken over this program, they have played very hard for mm-hmm. him. I think there's no question there, and there's no question about the effort. While we may have had gaps in places, it does take time to fill those gaps. I think that he's excited about the pieces that he has, and I feel like one of the hallmarks of a Jerry Stackhouse coach team is that those teams get better over time. And so the team that you see in November is not the same team that you see in February.
Right.
He is clearly a developer of talent. He has a great eye for the game. I mean, you can't be what he's been, mm-mm. right, and not have that.
Nope.
But he also connects well with these young people. That's a big, big part of it. And they love playing for him. I also like his staff a lot. Yeah. You know, I think that's something, especially when you're making that transition to college and it's a new opportunity, you have to also figure out staff, like what works for you, how you want to structure it, you know, infrastructure and all those things behind the scenes, those things matter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so I'm excited for him because it feels to me, he feels – when I watch him talk and operate, he's confident. He's excited. He is genuinely excited about this year. The energy, you could hardly contain him at the Top Golf event. I mean, he was excited, and he wants to be here.
Okay, so why? Because I'll just be full disclosure. Sure. I mean, I'll just let you know.
Sure.
I had serious doubts. Like, yeah. He won't be here long. This will be quick. In fact, I if you would have asked me in year one, mm-hmm. would we be talking about year three? I'd have been like, no.
You would have said no.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no.
You know, I think that.
So why does he want to be here?
Yeah, you know, there. So one, I'm gonna say this as much as I can. I have not. I think part of being successful here is that you have to see what is possible.
Yeah.
And then you have to actually believe that your vision can be executed here with the support, with the resources. And he believes that. So the thing about Jerry that I feel like he has suffered from to date is that some people have assumptions about him, perceptions about him, because here's a guy who has no connection to Vanderbilt,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right? It's not the same as Patrick Ewing going to Georgetown, right? Or Penny Hardaway at Memphis. Jawan Howard at Michigan.
Yeah.
And then, well, you know, one
examples.
Of these things is not like the other, right? Jerry Stackhouse at Vanderbilt. And everybody says, why? But inside, it makes sense to us. He cares deeply for kids. He wants to win. He can put his mark on this program. He cares about community and impact. He cares about what we're doing in our building and what this university is doing and how we're poised to do great things. And now we're actually getting to do them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is – I had breakfast with Tim Corbin this morning, and we spent a significant amount of time talking about Jerry Stackhouse.
Really?
And how he is an awesome part of this community. I think sometimes I have to remind myself that there are just things that I have the good fortune of seeing and knowing that unless you're in it, you don't see. And what I see is a guy who loves basketball. He loves education and the access that it provides. He loves impacting young people, and gosh dang it, he loves to win.
Yeah.
And we can do that here. You know, we can do that here, and we are very candid with one another. We talk very openly. He wants to be here because he knows what this is and also what it can be.
We're talking to Dr. Candace Story Lee, Vanderbilt Athletics Director, and you just led me right where I wanted to go.
Okay.
With Coach Corbin. With everything we're talking about, Coach Lee is new here, but he has the connection. He knows the program.
Right.
You know. Coach Stack, even though it's his third year, I mean, he kind of came in right in the transition, this new era, you taking over, kind of this new mm-hmm. beginning for Vanderbilt Athletics and mm-hmm. Coach Ralph just coming in. How important has Coach Corbin been, though, of somebody that's been here for a long time, like yourself, of tying it all together and kind of helping them along of, yeah, this is what it's been, but this is what it can be. I mean, this facility right here is a prime example
mm-hmm.
of what it can be
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the hard work that he's put in. So how important has that been?
Well, I think it's essential, right?
By the way, Candace, yes. Over the years, whenever he was winning and yes. everybody was coming after him, I was like, yeah, Tim's gone.
Like, you're just trying to get
I gotta remember, you're one of those fair weather believers.
No,
you have a great heart, though. I like you, so I don't want you to think that. But
I don't have your cookies.
You're like, yeah.
So I kind of missed the boat on that.
Do you remember what kind?
It was peanut butter.
Yeah, my husband likes butter. Chocolate chips, so you weren't like yeah, way off
right.
with that.
I said chocolate chips.
Right,
because
we
butter,
are
right?
a package, but peanut butter would be for me.
I know, and I would be sharing or trying to get you to look over there and take one. But no, when like LSU came, I was like, mm-hmm. he's going to take an LSU job.
Mm-hmm.
He is. But here he sits, what is this year? I don't even know how long it's been.
So, you know, I think that it's essential to have someone like Tim he is a real life example of what is possible.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? He has achieved at the highest level of his sport. I would argue that he is one of the best coaches in all of sports. He's also a tremendous leader. Right? So, one, he's like a mentor and example for so many of us in this department, for our coaches. But he also, Just think about what you said, though, right? So you thought that guy was going to go all mm-hmm. these places, but he understands what's here.
Mm-hmm. That's been a long time ago, by the
yeah,
way, since
but,
I said that.
But, okay.
Long time ago.
But, you know, also, too, you have an opportunity here to make your mark. And we're not here. We don't care about building legacies here. We're trying to have an impact, right? For, you know,
yeah.
Chase, you talked about being little. And that's your memories, your childhood memories are wrapped up into Vanderbilt. That's impact.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's amazing. And we don't take it for granted. And, you know, that was part of what Tim and I were talking about at breakfast this morning. Just, man, how incredible is it to have an opportunity to influence young people? When you have a platform like Tim's, you get to influence even beyond this beautiful space right here. It's awesome.
I love talking to him, by the way. I could talk to him every single day.
Oh, I could, too.
Like, I just sit back and just...
I feel smarter.
I just
like
this
every time I talk to him.
Like, when we talk, every time we have him on, I'm just sitting like this.
Right.
Like,
with your hand up on your face like that?
Just like that.
That's how I looked at breakfast this morning.
Like, I want to build a fire and just have, like, a fireside chat.
And be like,
chat.
Go ahead, coach.
Tim,
exactly.
You just yours. Just start talking.
But, you know, I mean, I do reference him quite a bit just as a template, right? Because, so when you're talking about transforming a program, you know, and he will talk openly about the early days.
Yeah.
And when you're just coaching culture, right? Mm-hmm. You're coaching culture. You're creating a vision. You're trying to get people to buy into something that they can't see yet. But we had the right coach. Then you give resources, time, and you also get out of the way when you need to.
Well, and he's a prime example, too, of a guy that rolled up his sleeves.
That's right.
And did the work. And Clark's
and
doing it now.
Did the work.
Yeah.
And that's the thing here. Like, you know, we attract people who are not afraid to do the work. I think that's kind of part of our ethos here.
Yeah.
But it's going to ensure the success and sustainable success. That's just part of it.
What has been the feedback from current student athletes and prospective students of, you know, all the announcements and everything financially that's going to go into the facilities, which we've talked to you about that quite a bit.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that everybody would love to go, and there it is, and it's done.
Me too.
But it doesn't happen.
Is that a wand?
There's not a wand, but right.
There's not magic powers, but...
But there's a lot of diligent, excitement. Consistent work that's happening. And again, it's one of those things, like I commented earlier, that I have to remember that, you know, people don't see the every meeting every day.
Yeah.
And all the things that are happening. And the fact that the architects are across the street right now meeting. And I'll leave here and I'll go back into that room and we'll just keep working. Because it does require that level of detail, right? The response has been tremendous. I've been particularly excited for current athletes who, you know, they already have self-selected to be here because they believe in the experience, and now they get to be excited because they know it's going to get even better, right? Prospective student athletes who are like, okay, Vanderbilt is for real.
Yeah.
Alums, regardless of age, who say, whew, like, yeah, it, you know, in some ways, it's about time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Sidewalk alums and fans who, cause, you know, part of it is you're still challenged by that narrative of like, you don't care, lack of investment. And it's like, I can't do anything about historically the conclusions that people have drawn, but I do know what we're doing now.
Yeah. I know,
right?
We've talked to you about that.
Yeah. Sure. And I mean, and it's part of it. You know, you don't, you know, one of the things you sit in the seat, you inherit everything that comes with the seat. Right? So I understand that. But meanwhile, when we get done, I'm going to go back across the street and finish meeting with the architects so we can continue this work. And it's been tremendous. But, you know, the reality is that every single person that's connected with Commodore Nation deserves this. And if I could flip a switch, I would. But there's sequencing. We have to prioritize. We have to do all the non-sexy stuff, like deal with the sewer line and, you know, make sure there's going to be power to that new pretty building and that kind of thing. But it's coming and it's exciting, and the response has been great.
In my mind, I think one of the most important but also most difficult things is you want to get new, you want to get current, but you want to preserve history too.
That's right.
Like Memorial Gym.
Like Memorial's a great
this
example.
This stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to lose that, but
right.
You know they obviously need things done to them.
Sure.
They need work. So
sure.
What is the balance of, you know, outside of just blowing them both up, building
right.
these new state-of-the-art things, but also
right.
keeping that pun intended, Memorial magic,
right.
and then with the stadium?
Well, I think, you know, so Memorial is a good example. So if you were in the gym last night, or if you'll, you know, if you're going to join us tonight, which I hope many people do, you will notice that there's additional ribbon boards, there's more LED displays, there's monitors in the corner, there's audio piped in, there's new concessions, there's new. So it's just, that's just a step, right? We have much more work to do. But I think that's an example of, I was talking to an alum last night at the game who said, man, I love the wooden bleachers. There's so many things about Memorial I love. But, dang, it's kind of nice to see, like, the fancy pixels in the corner and the stats and the, you know. And we used last night to really try to work some of those kinks out because technology is not always our friend. But, you know, that's just an example, right? And so I do think that finding that sweet spot is important, right? But historic, you can preserve history but still have new amenities and modernize the experience for people, right? So we're, you know, we are really trying to find that balance.
Yeah.
Okay, let's wrap up with a couple really hard-hitting questions.
Uh-oh.
Let's do it.
She's ready for
it. It's not a game of horse. It's a game of Vandy, okay?
Okay.
You versus Stack. Who wins a game of Vandy?
Ooh.
Like I said, it's not horse.
I mean,
your letters are V-A-N-D-Y.
The thing about playing horse or Vandy, you know, you can do any shot, right? So I feel like Stack would try to dunk, and then Stack would do all kind of crazy stuff. And seeing as how this is day eight of me not walking on a cane, I just think it would be unfair. That's one. Two, he's a former NBA player. I am a has-been role player at best. So I will go ahead and acquiesce to him that he would win.
Okay,
that.
But no dunking. No dunking.
No dunking?
No dunking. Just
see, I feel like if this was maybe
creative
like
shooting.
A nice, like, on the block kind of, because I don't think Stack ever played on the block. So, I mean, so I feel like if we didn't do any dunking and no, like, weird half-court shots.
Okay.
I'd probably still lose, but I'd be more competitive. But there's no way I would tell him that. Hopefully he's practicing right now and doesn't hear this.
Free throw shooting contest. Who wins?
Yeah, I only shot like 55% from my career. So he probably
Candace,
would.
What happened?
Could you come up with something that maybe I could? I bet you he can't walk well with a cane.
I was going to do 3-point, but you just told me your free throw shooting.
Well, the man played in the NBA. I mean, come on. Is this fair?
Stack's pretty money from three.
He also cooks better than me. We all know that. Man. So, I mean, is there something else?
This was a bad experiment. I really thought there was something I could weave in there where you're going to be like, me!
Yeah, you didn't do your homework, did you?
Guess not.
Perhaps next time. But the
layup,
good news.
Layup drill?
Kentucky drill?
The Kentucky drill? I mean, you know, Stack, one of those elite athletes, he probably didn't even care about layup drill, so I could get him there.
Putt-putt?
Putt-putt!
Okay.
Oh, yeah,
because
he probably thinks he's too good for putt-putt. Yeah, I got him there.
All right.
I got him there.
Thanks for having us out today.
Oh, I'm so glad you all are here. Yeah. I hope you'll come back.
Yep, we will.
It's pretty cool to
you'll have
from
us.
Here. You are always welcome here, okay. Naysaying and all. But that's old, right?
Look, I'm just being honest with you. I'm just
kidding.
One of those trying to be honest. I'm not going to be phony about it.
I don't want
right?
phony.
I
do not want
no.
it.
I'll just tell you. I mean, I did
want
that.
You to be straight up.
Candace, this is a true story. At SEC Media Days many, many years ago, Rich Brooks was the coach at Kentucky football. Mm-hmm. And when they hired him, I mean, I went on for days, maybe weeks, maybe months, saying, oh, my gosh, this has got to be – like the most ridiculous hire. First, he hadn't been in coaching forever. The last time he was a coach was in the NFL. I was like, what are they doing? Rich Brooks. This is ridiculous. And, of course, we know he did quite well.
Yep.
And I did. Before we started the interview, I said, you don't know me, but, you know, I'm part of a radio show here in Nashville, and – you know, I said you were honestly maybe the worst hire in Kentucky football history.
But you're like,
and you know what he did?
What did he do?
When you got hired. When
right.
you got
yeah,
hired.
Yeah,
I said, so I just want to say that to your face. Like, you have so proven me wrong. Like, it's like I now look at what I said, and I'm like, man, did you dog me with that? Like, in your face.
Yeah.
And you know what he did? He laughed. Like,
oh,
he
yeah.
loved it. Like, he was. He was great about it.
I think, actually, so I know I'm teasing you, but one, I think that, you know, like, we love sports, so we're passionate about what we think, and we share, and we, you know, that's part of
yeah.
it, right? I also appreciate, though, that you're like, when I'm proven wrong, I'll just say I'm wrong. And
no
then
doubt.
You know, you're not taking yourself too seriously. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. yeah.
But when he wins a contest, it's a victory lap.
Yeah, oh, it's all day. Life.
Yeah,
it's
I can. I mean, I can kind of sense
yeah,
that. Yeah.
You're going to know.
There's a lot of that.
Everybody's going to know.
You're going to know when I get it right, Candace. But you'll also know when I get it wrong. Good to see you. Thanks for coming
Great.
By.
Thank you so much for having me.
She's the athletics director here at Vanderbilt. Candace Story Lee, we appreciate her joining us here live at Hawkinsfield. We'll come back with more here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the DDC, Christian Fulton back on the practice field for the Titans. Yeah, designated to return from IR. How about that?
That's big.
That is big. They need him back in the fold. For sure. Now, let's talk about, we're going to go to New Orleans to start the third hour. We're going to learn a little bit more about the opponent that will be here on Sunday in the Saints. We'll talk to their play-by-play guy. Then after that, we'll hear from Mike Vrabel as they get prepared for that game against the Saints. But there was some news that happened yesterday after we got off the air.
Yes.
And I don't know why I'm surprised, but I get, you know, because I kind of asked myself, I was like, why am I really surprised by this? He hasn't really done anything, but I guess I was still surprised, if I'm just being totally honest. Yesterday, the Titans put out there about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon that they had waived Breon Borders. Okay, that didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But they also had waived from the active roster wide receiver Josh Reynolds. So the Josh Reynolds experiment
is over. Well, and the report was, I think it was Garofalo put it out there, that he had asked for and had been granted his release.
Right. But, okay, and that's fine. And I guess we need to incorporate that into the story because yeah. That suggests that he's like, hey, I'm healthy, I'm available, I'm here to help, and you guys don't seem interested in me. So the question is, why?
Well, I'm going to look at it.
Why have they felt the need not to really – like, what do we not know? Like, is he just not good?
Well,
is he not good enough?
That's – so
I'm going to look at it with his injuries.
I'm going to look at it from two different ways.
Okay.
And preface this by saying, we haven't seen him a whole lot here. But what I have seen is not all that impressive.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, but
– And clearly – you know, as we've discussed with Mike Vrabel, when he's irritated by somebody, you kind of can figure out that he's irritated by somebody. And every time Josh Reynolds is brought up, you can kind of tell he's irritated.
Yeah, there's not much meat on the bone.
So that tells me that maybe he just didn't fit. And the second thing is they signed him to a one-year deal mm-hmm. out of L.A. to see what he could do, and a month later traded for Julio Jones. Now, I get it. It's Julio Jones. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But that certainly had an effect, and you can just tell. And things were never right, and that's on him. That's just kind of like, hey, man, that's the business. It's Julio Jones. You know, you just got to take that and do something with it,
yeah,
and he never did.
Yeah, I was going to say, but Chase, that could affect Marcus Johnson, not Josh Reynolds. It could affect Chester Rogers.
And it didn't. Something with it.
It could affect NWI.
Yep.
But it didn't. So.
That's why I said that's on him, that he didn't do anything with that chip. Because you trade, if you get signed and you're like, all right, I'm the number two wide receiver. When he signed here, that's probably what he was thinking. Well, then all of a sudden they trade for Julio Jones. You are no longer the number two wide receiver. And then you go into training camp and you're hurt. You're not even the number three wide receiver at that point. You're not even the number four. You're having to fight for your position. Well, you know what? You can sit there and you can pout and be upset about it, or you can go to work and get your spot back. And here's the other thing. Julio's been hurt too. So all of a sudden, you had an opportunity to become the second wide receiver again, and you didn't do that. And is that attitude, is that ability, or is that all of the above? I think it's all of the above. Number one, I think his attitude wasn't very good. And number two, I just don't think he's that good.
Okay, so that's what you may have just answered, but that's where I was going next is, okay, so why wasn't he good enough to be better than NWI on the depth chart, Rogers, Johnson, why?
I think attitude did have a lot to do with it.
I mean, Rogers and NWI especially.
Right.
Guys, I mean, why?
Well, because they've worked their butt off.
Because we weren't talking about them before the season began.
No, and – And are they, I mean, and you're not asking, and Mark is, and Johnson's in this too, you know, you're not asking them to put up A.J. Brown numbers, but the job that they have done when their number has been called has been good. And they've deserved that opportunity. They've earned more opportunities. And Josh Reynolds, in my opinion, wasn't doing that. And that's either because of, like I just said, it's either attitude, ability, or all of the above. And I think it's all of the above. And clearly, you know, the coaches weren't happy about it. I mean, when he walked into J-Rob's office or however that goes and says, I want my release.
I think probably his agent just picked up the phone.
It doesn't seem like it was like, wait, no. What can we do to work this out? It seemed very like, okay.
Yeah, but does that really happen, though? I mean, typically when you get to that point, it's like both sides are ready to probably end the relationship anyway.
I think I mean, right? It obviously depends on the skins on the wall that you have, but, you know, usually, yeah. It's like it's
– I mean, if you're at the breaking point of your agent telling the GM, I want out, then you know the relationship is severed to begin with.
Right. So, I mean –
everything is not beautiful if you're asking your agent to tell the team that.
Yeah. So when I saw that news yesterday, I was like, okay. I wasn't that surprised. I mean, I was surprised in the fact of, oh, well, that wasn't on my mind that was going to happen today. But, okay. He hadn't done much, so.
What do he have this year, 10 catches?
Something like that.
Not even 100 yards?
No, I
will. The good news is, for John Robinson, this is not a big deal because it was a very, very team-friendly deal. Right?
Yeah.
It was a 1 year, $1.5 million. I think whoever claims him, if someone claims him, and I'm sure somebody will, I think it's going to cost him $500,000 the rest of the way. So, I mean, there was no, you know, this was not a Adam Humphreys 3 years, $27 million deal. Right?
Right.
There you go. Wow. They paid Adam Humphreys $9 million a year. Really? Josh Reynolds was a 1 year, $1.5 million. So, that's you know, in today's, I get it, there's a cap, but in today's NFL standards, like, that's a nothing deal.
Yeah.
Right? That's a nothing. Like, you just walk away, goodbye. That's no big deal. I guess I'm just amazed that, and I want to see if he lands somewhere else. I want to see if it looks any different anywhere else.
Right.
But honestly,
I don't know that it's going
in the Rams offense when they throw so much, it probably was telling that he's only 26 years old.
Yeah.
It's got to be telling that the Rams in a pass happy offense with that head coach when they moved on from the 26 year old wide receiver.
Right.
Who doesn't cost them much. Who's not that, you know.
And granted, they have Cup and they have Woods, but.
Well, yeah, and then they drafted Van Jefferson, and so but still, I mean, it still kind of told us, well, he's the tight end.
I know, but they throw to him, too. I mean, he's.
Right, but I'm saying it probably told us that, the Rams are like, we're not losing really anything.
Right. Yeah, good luck to you.
So I guess the big thing is, are we going to see any production out of him anywhere else?
I don't
know. Because I've seen where the Lions could take. Is this where all the Titans receivers are going to go when they leave here?
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit.
Khalif Raymond.
I saw the Jags.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure he's going to get picked up.
So is it going to look. Yeah, I do too. For
like he could get picked up before OBJ does.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you listen to Pete Carroll's presser, I mean, that was that not. What an odd presser.
Yeah.
What an odd way to answer that. If you're going to do that, then why wouldn't you just come out and say, yeah, we're – I mean, I guess you can't because it's not done, but wasn't that weird how he – I mean, he's like, I'm not saying we are. I mean, I guess you just have to wait and see.
It's kind of a Pete
type
answer,
like,
though.
What? What just happened?
But, yeah, I mean, he's going to get picked up, and then the Titans – Here's kind of a cool thing, as you talk about transactions, the Titans did sign Chris Rowland, the former TSU wide receiver, to the practice squad, so some connections there. But I think now you're going to roll with the group you have. You hope that Julio continues to get better and healthier. and then you get the production that you need out of the three that we've talked about, and NWI and Chester Rogers and Marcus Johnson.
Yeah.
I like this receiver group. I don't think it's bad. It's just got to stay healthy. That's the key part. And A.J. Brown's got to catch the ball.
Yeah.
That concerns me.
Well, I mean, it should concern you because it hasn't really changed.
No. And it's been
pretty consistent. It's been pretty consistent.
And the ball's hitting him right in the hands. Now, he's made some big catches, but he's had some big drops too. And if you're going to be the true number one guy and you want to get paid like a true number one guy, you got to catch the ball.
All right, we'll come back and we'll finish up this hour down in Dallas with Willie. We'll find out how morning skate looked with the Predators, maybe what the lineup will look like. We'll close things out with Willie down in Dallas. On the other side, as you listen to Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. There's going to be a Bud Light Preds watch party at Headquarters Beercade. Now, Chase tells me this is the spot. So if you're looking for a place to watch the Preds and the Stars tonight when they drop the puck at 7:30, this is your spot. Headquarters Beercade, located at 114 2nd Avenue South. That's downtown. Be great drink specials. You can enter to win Predators tickets to an upcoming home game and watch the Predators take on the Stars tonight. Remember, that action can be heard here on these airwaves. Pete and Hal will have your call at 7:30. I'll have pregame for you at 6:30. Let's head down to Dallas, where Willie is standing by as we are here live at Hawkins Field on the campus at Vanderbilt.
Willie, they're polishing up your statue right now. So it's looking good.
Are you serious? That is outstanding news. Is that why you guys are at the Hawk today? Donick statue?
Yeah, they're dedicating it. They're looking for you. Dr. Lee was asking where you were.
The agricultural department has it in their in the fields. It's used as a scarecrow. So there's a lot of bird poop on it right now. They're going to clean it up though.
Is it an ice statue that's going to melt in the weather, or is it like permanent? Real deal.
Yes, it's an ice statue. We're going to have a buffet set up.
It's
going to
be a meltdown.
A brunch. We'll have a brunch set up that we're going to attend, and there's an ice sculpture of you. So, yes, we'll take a picture and send it your way.
It's funny, though. You're wearing a bag chucker shirt. So.
Oh, kinda... okay, yeah. I got to do what I can for the brand, right, for Mason Howell.
Lobby in 10.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let me start here a little odd start. Back-to-back situation. Connor Ingram is back in Milwaukee. I brought this up with David Poyle yesterday. David Reddick. I don't think it's going to be tonight. It'll probably be in St. Louis. I don't know. But if they do go in the normal, traditional back-to-back situation, the backup goalie is going to see action in one of these games. What are you expecting out of David Reddick? Because the Connor Ingram experiment for two games was pretty good. So what do you think they have in Reddick?
Well, it's going to be hard to know until you see him out there.
Yeah.
We know that David Reddick has been a really good goalie in the NHL at times in his career. He's a big, strong guy that has played a lot of games, and that's why they picked him up. They felt like he was there on the bargain rack in a year where there was a lot of free agent goalies. A lot of teams shuffled goalies around, and he was out there, and they felt like he would be a good reclamation project, especially looking for a backup, because he sort of lost out in his chance to become a long-term starter in Calgary. So he's good enough to play excellent hockey, but as you heard David Poyle say, he just hasn't been able to play a lot because he only got limited action in the training camp, in the exhibition game. And then he got the COVID. So that's going to be the concern if he gets in there. I don't believe it'll be tonight. We're seeing UC Saros in the starter's crease today at the morning skate. So this will be a question that gets answered tomorrow in St. Louis.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask it now since I won't be with you guys tomorrow. So I wanted to work that in. Forsberg is out week to week. Cousins is out week to week. David Poyle told us yesterday Forsberg is not on this trip. They're both on IR. They brought up McCarron and Olivier from Milwaukee. They've been practicing with the team. They're with the team. Do you anticipate seeing them on this trip, or do you anticipate seeing them tonight against the Stars, or at least one of them?
based on the lines that they had at practice yesterday and based on their alignment today at morning skate, they are both going to be in there. You're going to see a big young lineup in there for the Predators tonight. And it's interesting, the Stars are the oldest roster in the NHL right now. With the addition of Ryan Suter, they picked up Braden Holtby, another veteran goalie. They still got Ben Bishop. They still got Anton Hudobin. It's a very experienced group. And the Predators just got younger with Cousins coming out. And now you have Matthew Olivier going in. You also, it looks like Rocco Grimaldi will be the odd man out tonight. And they're going to go with a big lineup with McCarron and Olivier in there. So a lot of muscle, two rugged teams that love to get after it physically. And they had some great battles last year. And I would anticipate that's going to be the case again tonight.
Wow, so the tour of former Predators defensemen continues. Seth Jones in Chicago on Sunday. Ryan Suter tonight in Dallas. Okay. Does St. Louis sign any former Predators?
Not a defenseman, but they have a forward.
No, I know, but defenseman. Is Dan Hamhuis with the Blues?
No.
Greg Zannon.
Greg Zannon. Yannick Weber. Did he sign with the Blues?
We'll have to check. You can never rule it out, but you never know when they might pick up somebody like that. Maybe Kimo Demon will come out of retirement and suit up for the tomorrow.
I did see
What about Cale Hulse for Crispy's tour? Crispy's farewell tour.
That would be a good one. That would be a good one.
Did I see yesterday at practice that Tanner Janot has kind of moved up the lineup as well?
Yeah.
Maybe he's not going to be with his usual suspects?
That is going to be a theme tonight. The herd has been struggling a little bit in the analytics department the last couple of games. And, of course, with Cousins being out, they have decided to jumble up three of the lines. The one line that's been clicking really well, Luke Cunning, Mikhail Granlund, and Matthew Shane, they will stay together. The other three all are different. Tanner Janot will be playing on a different line tonight. It'll be, if I remember correctly, Ryan Johansson is going to be with Janot and Tomasino. And then you have Sissons playing with Trennan and Tolvanen. That's going to be an interesting line to look at tonight. And then you have kind of a crash-and-bang line with Tommy Novak with two of the herdsmen, if you will, with Olivier and McCarron. We'll see what McCarron's got. They always like his makeup, his maturity. He always does well down in Milwaukee. He has not really done great things when he's with the Predators, but they like his size for sure. Let's see if he can make a good contribution tonight. So that fourth line will be interesting with Olivier in there.
Willie, you guys were talking about Ryan Suter just a few minutes ago. I mean, I see he's got 6 points in his first 11 games, but what are you kind of expecting to see out of him? Still a solid defenseman, even though he's later in his career.
Ryan Suter, to me, is a guy that always looks the same out there. He plays such a sound game. He's an efficient player. He's a guy that I think when he's 50 years old could probably do a lot of the same things out there. One of the things that he was talking about, Ryan Suter has always been one of those guys that's really good at the subtle cross-check. He got called for one of those in their last game against Vancouver, and Vancouver cashed in on the power play. So he said he's adjusting to that. For years and years, he was probably one of the best in the game at the subtle cross-check that you don't see. Gets you right in on the hands, on the ribs. But he's been called for 5 minor penalties this year already. But other than that, I think he's still playing well. There's a lot invested in the Dallas D with Klingberg and Suter and Haskin and Yanni Hakanpää. Remember that name from the playoff series last year against Carolina, Esa Lindell. So they've got a deep defense corps. So it's unusual that the Stars are giving up over 3 goals a game. That's been a problem for them. They have not won a game, guys, in regulation. They're the last team that hasn't won in regulation. They've got 4 wins, but they're all in overtime or a shootout. It's really a bizarre stat.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So speaking of defensemen, when you look at Mattias Ekholm, he was on with Robbie and Rexroad this morning. When you look at his stats, they don't blow you away by any means this year through 12 games. But how would you evaluate Ekholm's play to this point as John Hines has kind of mixed and matched some of the defensive pairings?
I would say not his best yet. I still think the best is yet to come with Mattias Ekholm's game. I think he would probably tell you that he has not had his A game. I do think Alex Carrier, who he played with, Carrier, for the most part, I think has done a great job of just picking up where he left off from last year. But, yeah, Matias Ekholm, no goals, two assists. You know, he's not known for putting up a huge number of points, but he usually is going to chip in with a big play offensively here and there. So I think he has not had his A game yet, but there's a long way to go. But he's a guy that they're counting on heavily for sure.
What is the situation on the mask?
Oh, this is big.
Do you have the game mask?
The game mask is ready. It is in the backpack. It will be debuted tonight on the bench. We talked strategy. The guy delivered whatever those things are, Chase, to the station. So I have one of those going. I haven't tried to figure out how to use it yet. I'm kind of confused. The seal by Unity PPE. Did you observe these, Chase, before I left? Did you take a look at what these things are?
I did not. They were handed to me, and I handed them to you. So okay. I'm not really sure how to use them.
I'm going to experiment with this in the hotel later today, but I don't know if you're going to. I can't promise that you're going to see that tonight, but I do thank the listener for thinking of me to try to come up with something here. But this is going to be worth watching. I will be interviewing, I think, Matthew Olivier on the bench tonight, and hopefully he won't burst out into laughter when everything goes awry. But the game mask is going to be in the spotlight tonight. We'll see if it does the job.
With glasses.
No glasses. The glasses are gone.
No glasses.
We kind of take that out of the equation because only bad things
happen. Oh, you've chucked the glasses. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They will be on during the broadcast, but not down the bench. They will not be down there.
Okay. Well, we wish you nothing but the best of luck. Thank you for an incredible report.
It was good.
Go box with Hal in between. You know,
yeah, do that.
After morning
skate.
Oh,
you know what? Darren, you would have been very disappointed. We are not at the hotel that has the punching bag that you took the lesson, which was captured on videotape, Hal Gill's boxing training of Darren McFarlane. It's one of the greatest 30-second clips of all time ever put on the Internet. Darren boxing at the W Hotel.
Well, hey.
So you're not across the street from the arena.
No, we're not. No, we're at a different place. But Hal says he documented the only time that you've ever gotten your heart rate over 120 during that 30.
Hey, tell Hal he'll just use me as a punching bag on the broadcast tonight, so it doesn't matter. He doesn't need it.
Oh, good okay, stuff. Willie, thanks for the report. We'll chat tomorrow, or you guys will chat tomorrow.
Guys. Sounds good.
All right. That is Willie Donick, not staying across the street from American Airlines Arena.
No, that was nice.
That was very convenient. We literally just walked right out of the hotel, directly across the street, and into the arena. That was nice.
I'll never forget, though, you walking in the room. I was taking a nap, and Hal had given you the boxing lesson. And Darren, are you okay? I thought you were about to die. Like, I really thought you were about to just
over. Good. I felt the same way. I thought that was it. I was kind of saying my goodbyes to you. And saying,
yeah, I was like, are you okay,
tell the family I love them, but I think this is it. All right, we'll come back. We'll head down to New Orleans. We'll learn a little bit more about the Saints. We do that next.